Gracias por descargar este contenido del canal de conferencias de Euskadi Digital. Visita nuestra web en www.euskadigital.net.
Okay, my name is Chris Smith. I'll be doing two talks this afternoon. One about 8-bit development and how that development from the 1980s has influenced game design and game implementation in the current game engines you see in Mortal Kombat and that kind of thing. And then the second talk I'll be giving will be about the ZX Spectrum ULA and how that was designed. Okay, starting off on 8-bit development.
Just a moment. We have a...
Buenas tardes. Habíamos tenido un problema con el sistema de sonido, pero ha sido solucionado ya. Es nuestro placer de presentar a Chris Smith desde Cardiff, Gales, que ha hecho un viaje enorme para estar aquí con vosotros para presentar dos sobre desarrollo de videojuegos de 8 bits y el segundo para explicar cómo se puede diseñar un microordenador de 8 bits. Y también hay un libro sobre este asunto que está disponible en el stand de RetroScale. Chris Smith solo habla inglés, por eso si tienes alguna pregunta que si no puedes entender algo, puedes preguntar a mí y puedo hacer una traducción, pero tengo este acento horroroso porque yo hablo el castellano de la Isla de Man, que tiene bastante diferente gramática y palabras, etc. Pero seguro que puedo traducir. Así que, pues nada. Adelante.
Okay. So, 80s 8-bit game development. In the early days, back in the early 1980s, people wrote games using BASIC. They coded on paper, turned that into hexadecimal, and typed that into the computer. Nothing more elaborate than that. They used simple graph paper for graphic design. No real sort of development tools. As time went on, and we're only talking a year, maybe 2 years, people started writing BASIC compilers, making more use of assemblers and graphics packages, particularly Melbourne House's Draw program. The early games, the early arcade games and the early home computer games were usually written by people who were learning programming, and they would manage to get a graphic on the screen, and then they'd get it to move, and then they'd add more graphics, and they'd build a game up layer on top of layer. So here is a made up example, but it will illustrate the point. So early game development cycle, we get a graphic on the screen. Then they'd manage to move that graphic. Then they might add some more, getting a bit clever. Then they might add some screen graphics around that. Then they'd work out how to do collision detection. And then they'd invent a game around that. So it was literally a layer on top of layer approach to designing games. So these early engines consisted of basically a rendering function, so how to put a graphic on the screen, and then the rest of the process was dealing with movement, keyboard, joystick, control, that sort of thing. But there was little separation between these, so they weren't true engines that we call engines today. A modern game engine consists of three basic elements. You've got a rendering loop, which redraws the scene. Now, in a game like Mortal Kombat or Doom or Quake or that kind of thing, basically what you're seeing is a movie. So it draws the entire screen, frame after frame after frame, very, very quickly. And that's done in a tight loop. So it is just like movie frames. In the 1980s, you didn't have that. We were still drawing sprite areas, but there was a rendering loop of sorts, so I will talk about that a bit more later on. In addition to the rendering loop, you have a game loop, which coordinates the movement, the animation, processes input, produces audio, does the collision detection. And alongside that, you've got the physics system, or what is called the rigid body dynamic system, which models the physical interactions between the objects and defines the laws of the world that you have developed. So, before I talk about this slide, the point about the modern game engines is that they developers create a world with physics and all the sprite rendering and all the graphics rendering in there. They then build a game within that. So the same engine can be translated from game to game. So you've got Mortal Kombat uses the same basic game engine behind all the different versions of their games that they brought out. But in the early 80s, game engines were mostly applicable to 3D isometric kind of games, like on the screen here. Beginning initially with Ultimate Play the Game's Filmation engine for Nightlore and Alien 8. They then did Filmation 2 for their Gun Frights and Nightshade games. John Rittman at Ocean did a very good engine, which he used for Head Over Heels and Batman. And it's this game I'm going to go on and talk about for the rest of this lecture. And that there were other game engines as well. So, all of these engines modelled world, a simple world, but it was a world nonetheless. Filmation Engine and Head Over Heels were notable for their advanced screen rendering, their advanced collision detection, the character-to-object and object-to-object interaction, and their gravity and momentum. All of these features are present in modern game engines. So, that's where they were done first. So here's a very quick three-part walkthrough of how the early rendering engines of these 3D games worked. There'd be a number of graphics on the screen, and they'd store them in a linked list, with basically the graphic furthest away from the viewer at the beginning of the list, and the graphic that was the closest at the front of the list. So when it drew those graphics on the screen, it drew them in that order so they would stack up on top of each other, with this graphic obscuring this one, that obscuring that, etc. The trick came is when these graphics moved. So when the bubble moves, it finds itself in a new place in the rendering stack, and so the items in the list are reordered. As soon as a moving graphic, a graphic moves on the screen, that area needs to be redrawn, because that's the only area that's been invalidated. But in doing so, any sprite which intersects with that redraw rectangle also needs to be redrawn. And that was quite a new thing back in the 80s, because normally they would just draw a sprite on top of a sprite, and there'd be no rectangle detection or any of that kind of advanced list handling happening, and it's the first time that a true engine really did start to appear on such machines. The collision detection that these games used was called used something called the separating axis theorem, which basically says if you've got a 3D axis where you've got your Z, your X, and your Y coordinates, if any one of these axes can be found where the projection of the convex objects you're talking about do not overlap, then the objects do not overlap. And it's still the most important scheme for collision detection used in game engines today. And this is how it works. You can see these objects are casting a projection onto the three planes. Over on this side, they clearly intersect, but here and here, the projections don't intersect. And you can see there's a line of separation between these objects stemming from this axis, and that's the axis of separation. And because there is a line of separation between them, the game engine knows that these two objects don't intersect. So it's a very, very quick, very, very low mathematical complexity way of determining whether objects in a 3D space have actually intersected, which was fantastic for a 1980s computer running at 3.5 megahertz and no real graphics capability. Anything more complicated than that would have made these games, well, not impossible to do, but playability would have been so slow that the rigid body dynamics, so the physics of these systems, basically had four types of interaction. An object being pushes back, preventing movement. So that's like the main graphic, walking into a wall or walking into a solid block. The second type is an object being pushed moves in that direction, so that's like your main character pushing a barrel or a ball or something. Sometimes you'll have an object striking something else, will transfer its movement onto that. And the fourth type is an object striking another causes a death event. So if you've walked into something that's spiky or into fire or something, you lose a life. Head over Heels implemented these dynamics by including a push flag on every sprite, and that flag just reflected the direction that the push had happened. So it would take the leading edge of a moving object and compare it against every other object in that graphic stack list. If any edges do touch, using the axis of separation theorem, then the object doesn't move, but it sets the relevant push flag on the touched object. And then, during the physics handling of the game loop, the push flag is checked, and an object-specific action is taken. So each object that has its flag set will do something particular depending on the type of object that is being touched. So it tells the object which direction they were pushed, which would move a stationary object in that direction, would stop an object if it was pushed against its motion. So an object that was coming towards, if you pushed it that way, it would stop it. And it also has a very, very interesting effect that you can see yourself if you go back and play these 80 games, that when the main character walks into one of the doors, if it's not perfectly in the centre, then the door sets the push flag of the main character and pushes the character into the middle of the door so it can get through. Quite brilliant, really. So, to summarise the game engines, modern games such as Mortal Kombat use techniques that were pioneered in the 80s on programmers of these isometric games, and provided features such as the rendering loop, the game loop, and the rigid body dynamics and physics that we see today. And that concludes the talk about 3D engines. Any questions?
Could you explain the most significant differences between the Filmation engine and the John Ridman engine?
The main difference between the Filmation engine and John Ridman's engine. Filmation copies everything into a back buffer, a duplicate of the screen. So 6K of very precious 42K of memory was consumed, used up immediately. John Ridman was very much cleverer in what he did. He would, when he was drawing the sprites within that rectangle, let me just go back a second. Bear with me. not going to work. Okay, I'll do it here. Right. The area inside this rectangle, every sprite he drew, he only drew the bit that was the partial sprites, basically, which meant that his engine was much faster than the Filmation Nightlore engine. Plus, instead of having a 6k buffer, he literally had a 256 byte buffer, which could change shape, so it might, that buffer might be 1 byte wide and 256 bytes long, or it could be 2 bytes wide and 128 bytes long, depending. So his code is very much more adaptive. Plus, the Nightlore engine only had, it had two sprites, two drawing programs in it, routines. One that would put the sprite on the screen without any pixel movement left or right, so it'll be basically in a pixel position, 0, 8, 16, etc. Or it had another routine which would print it at any location. Whereas John Rittman had, I think, 8 different sprite drawing routines. So he could choose the one that was relevant for the position of that sprite on the screen. It took more code, but he did lose 6k of memory just for this back buffer. So fundamentally different underneath. They both implemented the same thing, both had linked lists, but John's was much better. He did it second, so you know. Anything else? Okay. Fine. I'll move on and talk about the Spectrum ULA then, if there's no other questions. All right. Okay. Okay. This presentation is split into two sections. One is about designing the ZX Spectrum, and the other is about taking that design apart again.
¿Te ha gustado este especial? Si quieres seguir escuchando más eventos como este, date una vuelta por conferencias.euskadigital.net. Encontrarás todos los especiales emitidos en Euskadi Digital. Toma nota, conferencias.euskadigital.net.